call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
The mailbox is full and cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband. I ran really late today, so I'm going to try to be short, but there were several things I wanted to, because there's a couple things I've been researching a little bit, but I mentioned the one thing about some Nazi influences that are going on domestically. So I figured I would just set the stage for that. I won't go into it too deep, because I've seen articles and videos on the subject of what's happened domestically. And one of the best was Syriana Analysis, Kevork Elnasian, who on September 4th did a video that described an event that occurred in Altamont Springs in Florida. And he said it with an accent, but Altamont Springs in Florida, I used to live there. So this is an overpass, and I'm pretty sure I've been over that overpass many times. So it was kind of like, but you'll find that the thing that I found excellent about what he did, and I think this is because I've been striving to do this. He said, well, I think he even describes it. He says context, because he gave a lot of the history, and of obviously things relative to Ukraine, and because that is the current issue, and he said a lot of things. Most of the things I've said before, he did enlighten me on one point that I wasn't aware of, and I can't think of what that was right now. But you know, he did point out again the idea of Nazism started in the Third Reich, you know, with Adolf Hitler and. And of course, the history behind that, I would suggest, has been distorted for objectives. But the thing that's happened is that Nazism was at war, literally, with communism, the Soviet Union. I mean, they were, you know, guns and knives. I mean, lots of battles going on between Germany and the Soviet Union. I mean, this was quite noticeable. And as he has pointed out, which I've mentioned before, there were people in various places working with the Germans in order to defeat the Russians. Well, Ukraine was fighting, obviously, there was part of the Soviet Union at the time, but they had a strong influence of Well, they had an influence of Nazism. Specifically, the prime mover was Stepan Bandera. And, you know, you'll hear various things about how he cooperated with and had contentions with Adolf Hitler. But, you know, they were contemporaries. And again, there's monuments. You'll see all the I think he even has some of the torchlight marches and whatnot, where they have the big flags with you know, images of Bandera and things of that nature. So, but the tension that you see in World War II between fascism, Nazism, and communism is the tension we have today in Ukraine with fascism and communism, loosely. Because the presence of fascism or Nazism is, you know, apparently, my understanding, especially in Lviv, but in other places, you will find a strong presence of that. And it's been used and it's been amplified specifically with, as he mentions, you know, the right sector and the Azov Battalion. I think the Azov Battalion is a bigger group. I think the right sector is a more pushy group. I don't know if that's true or not. It's just that part is just an impression. Whereas you go to the Donbass region, you will still find people who are, and I got to find that because I saw an interview with the guy who was the head of the Communist Party in that area, because he wants to restore that, and so do a lot of other people. So there's that tension. But the issue is how much of that is actually part of the culture. And I think what we have is, because we have this event that occurred Apparently, there was the one in Florida a few days ago, and in Wisconsin, I think it was, not too long ago. But the issue is, how many, you know, the American Nazi Party has been around for a long time. They're different, but the same. You'll find when you see some of their gatherings, you'll see them. They do the various marches and so forth, and you'll see them marching, saying "Hail Victory." What is "Hail Victory"? The English version of "Sieg Heil," which is what was said by the Germans. It's either "Sieg Heil" or "Heil Hitler." "Sieg Heil," "Hail Victory," "Heil Hitler," "Hail Hitler." So that's here domestically. Their focus seems to be mostly, at least what I've seen of it, is the black-white issue. There is it's a white racist group, a lot of them. Is that universal? I don't know. The thing that I found fascinating, when you listen to some of these people, you know, the title here, Biden Better Than Trump, because the point is, because he sends rockets to Ukraine, because the photo you have, the guy in the background is called, was it Boneface or whatever, he has all sorts of tattoos all over his face, big swastikas and whatnot on his chest or whatever. He's actually been to Ukraine many times and fought for both the right sector and the Azov Battalion. Has offered some criticism about them because they're not as strong as he would like them to be, apparently. But so you look at that group and you say, oh, you know, it's easy to brand them as a hate group and things of that nature. Well, I think bottom line, they are. However, one of the things that was fascinating, that they were here on this highway overpass. They also went to Disney World. And what did they do at Disney World? They criticized them for grooming. And I see, that's what I find so fascinating. Because, no, I'm sorry. The issue about, you know, again, I'm the guy who did, you know, Black Families Matter. The difference between a black man and a white man is skin color. Nothing. It's not a big deal. But the idea of grooming... So I would disagree with them on the racism aspect. I would agree with them on the grooming aspect, bringing homosexuality into our culture. That's not a good idea. And it's fascinating because you see this group and you say, there's a lot of things I don't want to be a part of that group, but not all. And that's important because it's not binary. It's not you are 100% on board or you're 100% against. And, you know, it's simply not true. There was, I wanted to, because I can give you examples with Islam and so, well, you know, I don't want to, because I won't go into that. Let me just stick with this. What I find so fascinating, and especially because, again, this is a little bit of my family history, so therefore my kids' history. I'll give you several pictures. One picture is from 1938, the Rally for Greater Germany. I don't know if it started in the 20s, but in the 30s, they would have the annual Nuremberg rallies. And the biggest one, apparently, was the, I guess it was indeed 38. And the thing that was, this is where they actually did the Triumph of the Will movie. It was done on film. You know, and the thing I somehow am so fascinated about that, you know, we have the flying cameras kind of thing. It's commonplace now where you have a camera that moves around in order to give you that kind of a ooh-ah. You see it. And, you know, I've seen it in church services and whatnot and so forth. And it's commonplace right now. It gives you a particular feeling, a sense. It gives you a higher production standards. But the thing that I find so fascinating, where was, you know, you go back to 1938, that was really expensive to do, especially when you do it over long distance. In Triumph of the Will, and I need to put that on Kozlowski.org, because it was a Nazi propaganda film. It was, I think, pretty much required viewing for the population. But the artistry behind that was phenomenal. It was definitely an emotional, I want to be a part of this. I mean, it was superbly done. Because, you know, there was the one speech that Adolf Hitler gave. And one of the things I found so fascinating, you know, lots of people would come up. Then he comes up to the stage and then he waits. And he waits. And he waits, just standing there in silence. And I think what you saw there is it shows his power over the audience. He's trying to indicate to you, I'm the important one here. And I think if you look at this, because you see it in Triumph of the Will, he did that superbly. So, you know, for stage presence, this guy was very good at it. He may have had some other issues. But, you know, again, The Triumph of the Will film, one of the things they did is they had this massive gathering, had all sorts of events, one thing after another. And in some of the events, you had, there was a one place where, from the big stage, Adolf Hitler makes a long walk with some of his top generals or whatever to whatever it was. And then comes back, so the whole crowd is watching. But they have all these towers, and you can see on one of the towers, there's a platform moving up and down. So a platform with somebody on it. So this was, you know, this was not the remote-controlled camera. This had a cameraman. I mean, so this was quite a piece of work. And where do you see that flying camera? Relatively simple compared to what's done today, but you saw it back then. So what I suggest is there are two aspects here, what the message they're doing and the way they're presenting it. And Triumph of the Will, they presented the message superbly. And some of the issues, again, were actually, I would agree with. It was probably very little. But the artistry was superb. There's the scenes where you have the line of soldiers marching down the streets, and the cameraman is laying on the ground. It gives you that. Anyway, there's so many things in that artistically fantastic. It was black and white, but there was a very noted photo, because you'll find this often, and of course it's on Kozlowski.org, and I have the link to it. It's a color photo. And I've used this before because my contention is my mom was 18. And I suggest it's probably at least, it's a possibility. It may be 50, I think it may be at least 50% possibility. My mom's in that photo. Which sets a context. Because what I did is then there's a 1940 photo, which again, and these photos I actually have on my wall behind me. The 1948, this is my family. My grandfather, my mom, my grandmother, and three other people. But it's a great photo of my family, my mom. Directly above my mom's head is a photo on the wall. Draped with a flower of Adolf Hitler. So 1940, and I wonder, was it allegiance to or requirement of? And I don't know. I think it was more requirement of, but I'm not sure, because the next photo from 1941 is my mom doing secretarial duties. Okay, 1941. The war was active. You know, started in 39. We didn't get involved till later, but it was active. And if you look at the full picture, you can see my mom in these old coffee grinders, and you can see the photo behind her on the wall of a German soldier, and you don't see his face, but you do see his shoulder with the swastika on it. So, I mean, I find that just remarkably interesting, because that's my mom. The next photo is from my mom with two other people. But the other person, and I think my understanding, this is when she was doing the secretarial duties, standing next to a German soldier. So it wasn't that it was far away. My mom was part of this. But again, was it allegiance to or simply this is the job? Because, and I don't know. The next photo is, you know, we have the Nuremberg Rally Grounds, the Zeppelin Field, as it's called, in 1938. We have the Nuremberg Rally Grounds in 1946. At that time, it was renamed to Soldiers Field because, you know, the Germany was defeated. And so, for example, the big swastika, I have the video of it where it was blown up. But at that same location is a gentleman in front of a, you know, a vehicle. Not what we call a modern vehicle, but a nice vehicle at the time. It's my dad, a U.S. soldier. So I have my mom working for the National Socialist German Workers' Party, a Nazi, and my dad, an American soldier. And then you have another 1946 photo of Mr. and Mrs. Kozlowski, my mom and dad, as a couple. And that's why that's one of the reasons why reconciliation is such a big deal, because obviously politically they were in really different sides because both sides were shooting each other. And as I point out, they had a 60-year-long loving relationship, even though their heritage is a little bit of contrast. I added one more photo of Joseph Zawoski, my grandfather. I've never met him because he died in 48 or 47. 47, 48. But my mom's dad, you see, he's in the 1940 photo, wearing his German uniform. And it is my sense, because I never met him, but I met his wife, my grandmother. And we had a great relationship. And I remember just the way she said it. Das war ein Mann. Ein Mann. That was a man. She looked at her husband as a man. Not as a wimp, as a man. And it's very clear the way she said it. She loved him. Obviously, she spent many years without him, but she loved him unambiguously. That is clear. And that's my grandfather. That's my grandfather. And the thing I pointed out before, I'll point it out again. You see him in his uniform. He does have the scar because that was... You'll see it clearly on his face because that was more common during that era. There was the idea of you would get a scar and like put tobacco or whatnot in it to make it more vivid. So the scar didn't necessarily have to be real in the sense of it was happened in battle or whatnot. But if you cut yourself or whatever and then you put the... It becomes a real vivid scar, and it shows you're macho. What actually is behind what you see on his cheek there, I don't know. Whether it's related to this, I don't know. But again, I'm familiar with that history. The other thing is, you know, he clearly has cigar. So I assume, you know, that would be consistent with the tobacco stain, but I don't know. But the other thing is, you'll see he has an iron cross. So how did he get it? My assumption, it was earned somehow. But you'll see, I think what you see in his uniform, my guess is he wanted to, because again, I think he was ill at the time, knew his death was coming, so he wanted a photo of him, and I think he was trying to say he's a German. I don't think he was trying to say he's a Nazi. That's my guess. I think it's a rational guess. But again, I don't know. But from this sense I have, I think there's probably a lot of his characteristics, the way my grandmother described him, in me. I'm his grandson. But the point of all of this, I can see the Third Reich Nazis. And the question is, how much of the culture within Germany, you did it because you had to, because that's, you know, otherwise you're in trouble, or you want to? There's a difference. So how much was that true in the Soviet Union? The Soviet Union was communist because they wanted to, or you had to. Obviously, you know, the easy example in the Soviet Union are the gulags. And what was the gulags full of? A lot of the Christian community said, no, I'm sorry. My Lord is the Lord Jesus Christ. And a lot of those people ended up in the gulags. Various noted people. Anyway, but we see today these gentlemen in Florida doing this march, and they believe it's clear. They believe they're doing the salutes. They're doing the rather insulting with a lot of people and so forth. Rather provocative talk. These are the believers. But I think we can understand within the U.S., they're a small minority. They exist. They're a small minority. Because to say that, and I would suggest what you have is you have those who are overt. They will state these things. You have those who will agree with some of it. Well, again, I would agree with the grooming issue. Man, there's a problem there. I would not agree with their techniques about that, and clearly I do not agree with the white racism. But and of course I would disagree with a violent response to any of this stuff. But so you can see that this is a minority in the US. What is it in Ukraine? Both in the Ukrainian, the Nazis, because they are there. And I think my impression is they are a larger group percentage-wise within Ukraine than the Nazis in the U.S. are. That's my impression. The comment made by the Boneface was that there was some weakness in it because there was the mention it was called Avestal, the steel mill in Mariupol. That was put under siege by the Russians, and they just simply waited them out. A large steel mill, they waited them out, and eventually said, okay, you know, we're hungry, we'll give up. And the terms were you come out in single file line, and they came out in a single file line. They examined them, and, examined them by take your shirt off kind of stuff. You have tattoos, you have the Nazi tattoos and whatnot, you are taken as a prisoner of war. If not, the rest of them were, a lot of them were freed, but those were taken as prisoners of war. And there's been some contention because a lot of those were ended up in Turkey and then Turkey released them. So there was some tension between Turkey and Russia because of that, but I don't have all the details on that. But either way, because you had a lot of people, these are the overt. The covered in tattoos, that's overt. But the comment was, there's a weakness there. Because it's one thing to get yourself tattooed. It's another thing to pick up a gun and kill somebody. So you could have the insignias literally tattooed to your body, but it may not be quite that strong in your heart. You're in the club. You know, you go have a beer, you do the casual sexual relationships, which apparently is common with them and so forth, and all those kind of things. But to kill somebody or to do other foul things, you don't do. So to what degree is that happening? I don't know. But then the bottom line is, using the example of my mom and dad, somebody today in Donbass who says these people in the western part of Ukraine, the true fascists, they've been bombing us for 8 or now 9 years. I mean, the war didn't start in 2022. It started in 2014. And between 2014 and 2022, something like 14,000 people died in Donbass at the hands of the Ukrainian government. That leads to a little bit of tension, and that's why the petition to the Russian government, would you help us, please? Because again, there was the Minsk Accords, which the West, including the Ukrainian government and, you know, the Western countries, us, signed and says, we agree to this, and we completely violated it, because that was supposed to give the Donbass region some autonomy, and they didn't do it. They just, you know, to give somebody autonomy and then bomb them is, you know, maybe there's some question here. So all that put together, you look at the history of the Third Reich, and I would suggest what we're seeing is the Fourth Reich in a very real way, and I would suggest it's the Fourth Reich is based very strongly in the U.S. or Western Europe and things of that nature, because it is the collectivism of fascism versus the collectivism of communism. The problem is collectivism versus collectivism is a problem. And that's why, again, when I point out democracy and freedom are opposites, because democracy is a collectivist methodology. So what's the difference between democracy, fascism, and communism? I would suggest it's not as strong of a difference than people make it out to be. I want to be in my particular brand. And I don't like you because you have a different brand, but you're all collectivists. And I think that's a problem. But the fundamental is there's the collectivization and there are the individuals, especially individuals become families. You know, in the obvious case, the Nazi and the American soldier, who I call mom and dad. That's a big deal. Anyway, I want my kids to understand this because, again, it's their history. And when you look at the things that are happening today, I think this is very relevant. I think, you know, so a quick history lesson. And one other thing, I did send a postcard today to my wife because time to eat. I sauteed an onion and just that aroma was kind of like, wonderful. And I was thinking, I wish I could share this with my wife. So I wrote her, I'm sauteing an onion and it smells wonderful. It'd be great to share a meal with you again. I love you. I love you. I love you. You're a man. And of course, yesterday, a postcard came back. You know, I feel so alone. Please take my hand. I love you. I love you. I love you. You're a man. And one of the things I find so fascinating is the arrow here. And, you know, one of the things I don't know is, yeah, okay, why the arrow? Because it looks like somebody drew an arrow here. The card that you see, the original, does not have that. So did somebody do this on purpose or was it accidental? And, you know, the reason it's fascinating, I feel so alone, please take my hand, an arrow pointing that, and then next to it, refused. There's a message here, not a good one. To say it hurts, yes, it hurts. But, you know, see, when you go back to the issue of the American soldier and the woman working for the National Socialist German Workers' Party, there was a tension, obviously. And I really wonder what they felt like about each other. They didn't know each other, obviously, in the 1930s or in the early 1940s. They probably met around, oh, I don't know, 45, 46, my guess. What was the attitude beforehand? What was the attitude towards each other when they met? And what was the attitude that I saw growing up with my mom and dad? I saw two imperfect people. There were numerous issues. I was not taught to be a follower of Christ and things of that nature. But the one thing I saw unambiguously, my dad loved my mom. and my mom loved my dad, it was clear. There was no question. I grew up in a home where that was not a question. Eric Lee, Jack, Tirza, Julia, George, for the most part, Susanna and Gloria Jane were younger, but for a good while they saw it. Walter, unfortunately, didn't see it that much, but he saw a little of it. Zadok clearly didn't. What they saw is a dad who loved their mom, unambiguously. What they're not seeing right now is that happening, because it still does, but I'm being kept from them. But they're not seeing the mom love their dad. That's clear. My mom, the Nazi, is showing more love, had shown more love, and I would suggest, in that sense, that context, more obedience to Christ than my wife, who is claimed to be, I don't know, a follower of Christ. But what you saw are people who were at war with each other in 60 years of a loving relationship. You know, I'm 67. There is a reasonable possibility my state of health will allow me at least another 20 years. You know, again, I might not make it tomorrow. But there's a reasonable possibility, because I'm in excellent health. So we had 20 years together, roughly. We've had 11 years apart. But we still have another 20 years together, perhaps. That is my desire, unambiguously. And I want my kids to know that. So I hope that one day they'll find this as a very good history lesson about the context of today, the American Nazism, the Nazism we see in Ukraine, and the Nazism of the Third Reich, and the similarities. I hope that's a very good, helpful history lesson. And again, I highly recommend Kevorkian-Lassian's summary was superb. And there are others. But beyond that, put it in the context of my own family. The love that my mom and dad showed towards each other. And I ask my wife, let's give our kids that same model. Please. Again, 1 Corinthians 7:11, but that's the Bible. My lady, my wife, I do love you and I want you back.